heart attack or accidents and so on and so forth. So no one is sure about him or her being alive after even one moment. That is why, I mean, the narrations and also the verses of the Quran putting emphasis on repenting right after committing the sins, not right. to delay repenting. This delay is one of the traps of the Satan.
Right. So do it right now, right here. And repenting actually means you never ever do that again. So that's the actual meaning of repenting. You don't go back to that path again. May Allah accept from you. May Allah accept from us. Thank you so much, Dr. Karimi, for again that enlightening session. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another episode, take good care of yourself. And wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest rose? Please, oh please, please come.
Midstream.
They were on their way to flee, to escape death from the northern Gaza Strip, but the Israeli entity war jets intercepted their way and launched a violent bombardment on them, leading to the death of at least 70 civilians in one moment. The Israeli occupation advised the Gazans to flee to the south of the Gaza Strip to ensure their escape from the raids. But what actually happened was that Zionist bombs and missiles accompanied the Gazans along the way. Until the writing of this report, the number of Palestinian martyrs from the Israeli occupation bombing of the Gaza Strip has reached 2,200 martyrs, while the number of wounded reached 8,800, most of whom are women and children. What is currently happening is a war of annihilation against Gaza in front of the world, which is doing absolutely nothing to stop it. The Palestinian Ministry of Health announced recently that during the past 10 days, since the start of its aggression against Gaza, the Israeli occupation has exterminated more than 55 Palestinian families, completely annihilated them to a point that their names have been erased from official records. Israeli entity warplanes have been continuously hammering the Gaza Strip, neighborhood by neighborhood, reducing buildings to rubble and sending people scrambling to find safety in the tiny, sealed-off territory. Humanitarian groups pleaded for the creation of corridors to get aid into Gaza and warned that hospitals overwhelmed with wounded people were running out of supplies. However, the Zionist Israeli entity has stopped entry of food, fuel, and medicine into Gaza, and the sole remaining access from Egypt was completely shut down after airstrikes hit the border crossing. Rescue officials in Gaza said large numbers of people are still trapped under the remnants of leveled buildings, with rescue equipment and ambulances unable to reach the area. Just take a look at this for a minor example. A large part of Gaza City's Rimal neighborhood was reduced to rubble after hours of airstrikes. Residents found buildings torn in half or demolished to mounds of concrete and rebar. Cars were flattened and trees burned out on residential streets transformed into moonscapes. Rimal, an upscale district home to government ministries, universities, media organizations, and aid agency offices, all now completely flattened. There is no safe place in Gaza right now. You see decent people being killed every day. It could have been you had you been born in Palestine. But it seems the luxury of being considered a valuable human life, not having to sleep, not knowing if you will ever wake up, has led you into narcotizing dysfunction, completely numb to all the horrors committed by Zionist Israel against the Palestinian people. However, rest assured, the Palestinian resistance never forgets the blood spilled by its people, and evidently knows perfectly well when to retaliate. Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. At least 800 Palestinian children have been killed by the Israeli military offensive on Gaza until the writing of this report, representing one-third of the death toll, with casualty count rapidly rising as the Israeli authorities seal Palestinians in Gaza off from food, fuel, electricity, water, and medical supplies. Now, Israeli regime official statements combined with widespread and systematic attacks carried out by the Israeli occupation forces in the Gaza Strip raise extreme concern that this is now a campaign of genocide against the Palestinian people. To discuss this issue with us from the West Bank is Dr. Amal Wahdan, who is a human rights advocate. Thanks a million for being with us, Dr. Amal Wahdan. Now, the humanitarian situation in Gaza has deteriorated to an unprecedented, dangerous level, with a dire need for the necessity of opening a humanitarian corridor to deliver aid to the people of the Gaza Strip. Why is the international community, Dr. Amal, completely deaf, mute to these atrocities?
Actually, the international community is deaf and blind. They cannot hear the cries of children and women, and they cannot see the TV screens that shows the human catastrophe in Gaza, which is beyond any imagination. 2 million Palestinian civilians living in an area of only 375 square meters are left without food, water, electricity, and medicine supplies and medical supplies for almost 10 days today. The Israelis have refused to let any aid coming from the Egyptian crossing at Rafah City in the south. They also refused any ceasefire to allow aid in. They don't care. They want revenge. This is called collective punishment and considered as grave violation of international law and international humanitarian law and also human rights. So these countries, what we call the international communities, which is led by the U.S. and its satellite states, actually violate human rights or human rights all over the world, now especially in Gaza Strip. They cannot see what the Israelis, what atrocities the Israelis are committing against our people in Gaza, and also our people in the West Bank, in occupied West Bank. The people of Gaza have been living under siege and open prison for 17 years now. If this is not a concentration camp, what do we call it then? They are partners in these war crimes that the Israelis are committing. Actually, our enemy as Palestinian people is the U.S. and its allies. It's not only the Israelis. Mm-hmm.
We have heard the Western mainstream media basically just beat the drums of war, claiming that the atrocities that the people in Gaza are facing is on the hands of the Palestinian resistance, Hamas, because they kickstarted the Al-Aqsa flood operation to begin with, as if Gaza was in so much peace before the Al-Aqsa flood. How do you debate such accusations?
First of all, the Palestinian resistance actually, what they did is a preemptive operation of Al-Aqsa flood, as their intelligence intercepted information that the Israeli occupation forces are preparing a military operation against Gaza just after their holiday. So what they did is a self-defense. They wanted to defend the Gazan people. They wanted to defend the Palestinians. As you know, the Palestinian people have been living under direct colonial occupation for over a century now, first by the British, then by the Zionists at the moment. So most of the Palestinian refugees who live in 8 refugee camps in the Gaza Strip were originally forced out of their villages. 55 villages were totally destroyed in Gaza Strip and in Beersheba. So the residents of these refugee camps came from the areas that was forcefully depopulated, displaced. So the international community has to look into the real causes of this war, mm-hmm. the real causes of these atrocities. If they only come to a point to recognize the UN Security Council, although we don't believe in it, if they only recognize that, if they only let the refugees back to their villages and their cities, there wouldn't be a need for this war. But of course, the U.S. and its allies want to maintain this military base of colonial apartheid Israel for its own interest, and the Palestinians have to pay the price for it.
Well, Dr. Amal, despite the destruction, we have equally seen undefeated Palestinian will and steadfastness that has amazed the world all across historic Palestine, not only in Gaza during the war, during the war. It is truly an astonishment, not only to the friends of Palestine, but also to the enemies of Palestine, especially the Israeli regime itself, and to the Western public opinion who support the Israeli colonial regime as well. How do you explain such a stance when people are facing the horrors that they are seeing in Gaza?
Yeah, it is an astonishment, but we can't be surprised by the Palestinian people who showed resilience and who showed patience and who showed steadfastness all over 75 years of direct Zionist occupation. We can see the women and the children, even the children who have survived the airstrikes of the Israeli F-16s, they are saying that we are not leaving our homes, we are not leaving our land. We did this before in 1948. We were forced out of our homes and our villages, thinking that we will be returning in a week, but we ended up living in refugee camps for 75 years, and that's why we need to steadfast. We need to stay on our land and defend it with our souls. And this is actually surprising for the Israelis, because they thought that if they continue to hit, if they continue their airstrikes against the civilians, they will force them to flee. And even when they told them that there are safe corridors for them to leave to the south, they hit them again with their airstrikes. So the Palestinians know that the only thing that they have is to resist this occupation and steadfast and remain on their lands.
But now Israel is saying that it's opening the corridors of the Rafah border crossing for just 5 hours before it supposedly begins the ground invasion of Gaza. Do you think that even that kind of a red line, if it is crossed by the Zionist entity, will the international community put a stop to it?
No. As I said, the U.S. is leading this international community. And even the U.S. is complicit in this crime. So there is no such thing as peace or secured corridors for the people to leave. We saw that they hit an envoy of cars which were driving to the south. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of people were either killed or injured. So the Israelis actually and the U.S. will, with its fleet in the Mediterranean, just close enough to the Gaza shores, are saying the same. Mm-hmm. They don't budge, and they want to continue stressing over and pressuring the Palestinians until they will destroy Hamas. Well, Hamas is not some isolated group from the Palestinian people, not only in Gaza, but in the whole historic Palestine and outside as well. They can't uproot the spirit of resistance from the Palestinian people. They only have two options, either to win and go back to their land, to their homes, which is in occupied 1948, or to continue resistance. There's no other choice.
Dr. Amal Wahdan, our guest from the West Bank Human Rights Advocate, thanks a million for your time and your contribution to our show, specifically at this very extraordinary times in Palestine. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned, because next we'll be talking about Zionist missiles that targeted the press right here in South Lebanon.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Now, an Israeli artillery strike hit a group of reporters from several outlets who were clearly marked as press. This war crime constituted a blatant attack and a crime against freedom of opinion and the press, human rights, and international humanitarian law through the easy killing of unarmed journalists, victims of their duty to convey the truth, defended with the lenses of their cameras and pens, and transfer them to the screens, the repeated Israeli occupation attacks in South Lebanon. Now, let's have more details about this in this following report.
In light of the crazy Israeli ultimatum to 2 million Palestinians in Gaza to move to the south of the Gaza Strip, and the further explosive repercussions it caused militarily and diplomatically, and on the Friday of the general readiness on October 13, in solidarity with the Palestinians in many countries, including Lebanon, the Lebanese press once again paid with blood the tax of covering the truth. At the gradually escalating confrontation lines on the southern Lebanese border with occupied Palestine, journalists were injured by direct and intentional criminal Israeli entity bombing that targeted SNG cars and media crews during their coverage of confrontations that took place in the outskirts of the southern village of Al-Mashab. A young journalist, Isam Abdullah, a photographer at Reuters, was killed in the Israeli entity bombing. Two other colleagues, Eli Brachia and Carmen Jukhadar from the Al Jazeera station team, were injured. Also, colleague Christina Asse, a correspondent of AFP, Agence France-Presse, was seriously injured in the feet and hands. And AFP correspondent Dylan Collins was seriously injured. The Iraqi correspondent for Reuters, Tha'er Qasim, and his Iraqi colleague, Maher Abdelatif, also suffered injuries and were taken to the Lebanese-Italian hospital in the city of Tyre. This dangerous development appeared to be a warning of the worsening situation on the ground in South Lebanon, such that the press and media became an indiscriminate target for the Israeli occupation, while the confrontation flared up as a result of the bombing of Al-Mashab, as the Islamic Resistance Hezbollah announced launching attacks on a number of Israeli occupation sites. The Israeli targeting of journalists sparked a wave of angry and widespread union, press, media, and political responses in Lebanon. The targeting of press and media crews came amid a clash that took place in the border area between the towns of Al-Dahira and Al-Mashab in the afternoon, where exchange of fire took place between the Israeli army and Hezbollah in light of violent Israeli bombardment of the area and intense overflights of Apache helicopters. According to the Lebanese army statement, an army intelligence control tower was hit, and the vicinity of Lebanese army and Grain Without Borders centers were bombed, but no casualties were recorded among the ranks of the soldiers. Just as Lebanon, atrocities against the press continued aggressively in Gaza as well, as the Israeli entity continues its most ferocious assault yet on the trapped people of Gaza. It has also targeted journalists' offices, telecommunication networks, and internet services, seemingly to prevent accounts of the mounting atrocities emerging. With these war crimes, the Israeli entity is seeking to silence the Palestinian narrative and erase all traces of its crimes committed against civilians and civilian infrastructure in Gaza. The Zionist Israeli regime wants to close off access to Gaza so that the attention of the Arab world and international public opinion won't be drawn towards the atrocities being committed in terms of war crimes and mass extermination.
To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Ali Awada, journalist and broadcaster at the Lebanese Al Manar channel. Thanks a million for being with us. Dr. Ali, now the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Immigrants instructed the permanent mission of Lebanon to the United Nations in New York to submit a complaint to the UN Security Council about the Israeli entity's deliberate killing of the martyr Issam Abdullah, the Lebanese journalist who worked for Reuters, and the wounding of several other colleagues as well who worked for Agence France Press and Al Jazeera and others as well. Do you believe this move will bring justice to Issam, to his family, to his colleagues?
The Israeli entity must be held accountable. This is the basic rule that all officials in Lebanon have been working on since the first moment reporters and media professionals were exposed to this unprecedented crime against journalists and media professionals. So much so that a team is directly exposed to this crime by the Zionist entity. The Israeli entity targeted them even though it knew for certain that these were journalists. This is a crime that will not be tolerated. This was confirmed by the chairman of the Media and Communications Committee, member of the Loyalty to the Resistance Bloc, MP Dr. Ibrahim al-Musawi. From the first moment of this crime, Dr. Musawi had a clear position, which was that Lebanon would not remain silent about this crime. And from that moment, this file was transferred. The Lebanese Ministry of Foreign Affairs was addressed to activate this file at the international level. The axis of resistance working on these files must make every effort required to be able to prosecute the Zionist enemy for this crime and other crimes it committed. In answer to your question, yes, there is a real effort being made by those concerned, including the Parliamentary Information Committee, which is making every effort with serious contacts made at the level of human rights associations in a number of European countries to activate this file. Because what happened is a crime in every sense of the word, and no one can cover it up. This is a crime because there were eyewitnesses who were present on the ground, and all data confirmed that the Zionist enemy was the one who committed this crime. Therefore, yes, I believe this time is unlike all the times. The Zionist enemy will be prosecuted for the crime it committed, but as for the nature of this prosecution, we will see where the path of justice will reach in it so that conclusions can be derived from it.
Well, Dr. Ali, in an attempt to basically just silence the truth, the Israeli entity keeps assaulting the media and the press, whether in Lebanon, in Palestine, in a bid to control the narrative that comes out of both countries. How do you think this makes those who work in the media feel while covering the live events as they unfold, especially in a war zone? And how much do you think it affects their efforts to deliver basically the truth to the public? Are they afraid to do their work now?
What the Zionist enemy is doing and what it has done towards the late photographer Mara Issam Abdullah will increase journalists' determination to convey the truth. This is what we saw in the Al Mashab area on the Lebanese-Palestinian border. It is true that press crews were targeted, but at the same time, the Arab local and cable channels were reporting what happened, and the reporters completed covering what the Zionist enemy was doing. There was a real attempt by the enemy to obscure the truth, especially since it was targeting Lebanese border areas. The enemy wanted to silence these media professionals, but the response was resounding when these reporters insisted on completing media coverage at the location of the crime, provided that they returned to the live broadcast again. This indicates one fact, that all these crimes, such as the killing of Al Jazeera correspondent Shireen Abu Akleh, whose memory is still fresh until this moment from May 2022, when she fell as a martyr. Yet this never silenced the voice of the truth, nor did it prevent reporters and media professionals from continuing to convey the truth to the whole world. The enemy wants to obscure this truth, but on the other hand, a group of reporters will always be on the lookout to defend the true story as it is in Gaza. In Gaza, we daily see the crimes committed by the enemy against the Palestinian people. What if there were no media that possessed conscience, freedom, and sanctified the truth? then wouldn't that truth be threatened and lost? So the will still persists amongst Lebanese journalists and wherever there are media outlets that have a free and honest conscience in this world.
Definitely, I hear you very well, Dr. Ali, but something really interesting, let me say, not to say another word, happened after the targeted killing of Isam Abdullah, the Lebanese journalist. We saw that there was blind bias and international and deliberate ignorance, if you will, of the international agency Reuters and a number of international media outlets who deliberately refrained from naming the side that killed Isam and injured his friends as well. I mean, why would they do that? How would you assess that the company, the media organization that Isam works with, actually deliberately dropped the people who committed the crime?
In fact, this bias was surprising. We always read that these media institutions are distinguished by their long history and that they are supposed to protect democracy and freedom, especially freedom of opinion and expression. But in fact, this is a failure that history will record regarding the extent of the media institutions' commitment to objectivity. Why? Because everyone was present and could see who bombed these media professionals. Therefore, this media institution was supposed to report the story as it is, without defending any party. It should have named the party that attacked Damara Isam Abdullah and the team present with him. This is a media misstep that will go down in history. But we know that in all the wars that took place over the past years, there were some media institutions run by Western parties that were somewhat sympathetic to the Zionist enemy. In addition, there is a lot of information and studies that clearly indicate that those who manage these institutions in administrative positions, especially the boards of directors, belong ideologically and intellectually to the Zionist enemy. Somewhat, this topic is neither surprising nor new. As we know, in all previous wars, whether in the July 2006 war or the American invasion of Iraq in 2003, there were many media institutions that adopted the framing technique in the process of covering events. In any case, this reality exists in most wars, where attempts are made to obscure the truth, to exonerate the oppressor and the murderer, and to attempt to hide the truth. However, public opinion remains much more aware, especially since we are in the era of social media and the reality of live feed broadcasting, which can distinguish between truth and falsehood, and there are always conscious professionals to follow the path of the truth.
I second your opinion here, Dr. Ali, concerning that, and the truth shall always be out there because there are a lot of people who care for Palestine and who care for Lebanon and will always tell the truth. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Ali Awada from Beirut, journalist and broadcaster at the Lebanese Al-Munawwar Channel, for joining us to talk about the atrocities that befell actually Lebanon at the martyrdom of our own Isam Abdullah, the Lebanese journalist who was killed by the Zionist entity, and his friends were injured right there when the whole world was seeing, just as the whole world was seeing how Gaza as well was being basically just under genocide by the Israeli entity. But we are always here. We are always going to remember every martyr that fell. We are always going to talk about the wounds of every one of our native Levantinians, and especially against the Israeli entity. And we are always here to give voice to the voiceless. Ladies and gents, we'll see you again next week for more from the Middle East Stream. Assalamu alaikum.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Gun violence has killed 123 people per day in the United States of America this year, with the total deaths including 1,079 teenagers and 216 children. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. China Daily wrote, U.S. President Joe Biden renewed his calls for Congress to pass more gun control in July after a spate of mass shootings. But, in contrast, conservative politicians have pushed for more gun rights nationwide. In Kentucky, Ohio, Nebraska, Texas, and Virginia, this year, 2023, Republicans have advocated for removing background checks, getting rid of red flag laws, and minimizing gun-free zones that limit where people can carry a firearm around others in public. There were 30,235 deaths involving a gun as of September 1st. At least 13,405 were homicides, murders, or unintentional shootings. The majority, at 16,830 or 69 per day, were suicides by gun, the archive found. Some states had far more suicides by gun than others, including Texas, California, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Illinois, and Louisiana. In two of these states, Texas and Georgia, Republican lawmakers have sought to have gun rights expanded while considering some gun control. Additionally, the United States has had 498 mass shootings as of mid-September. In Texas, there are ongoing calls to raise the minimum age for a person to purchase the assault-style weapon often used in mass shootings. It comes over a year after an 18-year-old gunman shot 19 students and two teachers at the Robb Elementary School in May 2022. Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott, a staunch gun rights advocate, believes raising the age would be unconstitutional. Abbott and other right-wing politicians hold dear the Second Amendment, which gives all U.S. people the right to keep and bear arms. They also oppose any interference from the federal government, experts say. Carl T. Bogus, professor of law at Roger Williams University in Rhode Island, told China Daily, "We are a two-party system, and the Republican Party considers the gun lobby to be an essential component of its political coalition." In at least 25 states of the United States of America, legal gun owners do not need a permit to carry a handgun in many public places. The number of states that have this law in place has risen since 2020, when only 16 states allowed it. Abbott signed a law in 2021 allowing for permitless carry, which enables residents of the state age 21 and older to carry handguns without a license or training. He warned, politicians from the federal level to the local level have threatened to take guns from law-abiding citizens, but we will not let that happen in Texas. In April 2022, Georgia followed Texas in eliminating the need for a permit to conceal or openly carry a firearm. The recent move was hailed as a monumental moment for the Second Amendment by the National Rifle Association, or NRA, which remains a powerful gun rights advocacy group. Jason Oyment, executive director of the NRA's Institute for Legislative Action, said in a statement, "Half the country now rightfully recognizes the fundamental right to carry a firearm for self-defense as enshrined in our Constitution, as opposed to a government privilege that citizens must ask permission to exercise." Last year, the Supreme Court, which has more conservative judges than liberal, expanded gun rights. It also struck down a century-old New York gun law that required people to obtain a license to carry a gun outside their homes. The United States of America has more guns than people, with approximately 390 million firearms in circulation in 2018, compared to a population of 331.9 million people, according to the Small Arms Survey, a Swiss-based research project. Also, according to the Business Standard website, as gun violence in the United States of America grows at an alarming rate, survey finds that the United States is the only nation in the world where civilian guns outnumber people. There are 120 guns for every 100 Americans, and that's according to the Switzerland-based Small Arms Survey, SAS. While many Americans hold the right to bear arms as sacrosanct, other critics of the Second Amendment counter that it threatens the right to life.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jalal, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of prayer based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javed, you know, we know that, you know, offering salam is recommended very much.
Sure.
And but returning it is obligatory, right?
Yes.
So what if, you know, somebody, in fact, offers us greetings, you know, with this certain word, with this, the very word salam, right, to you while you're offering your prayer. So, well, you're actually, it's obligatory for you to return their salam. But what if also they use some other words rather than the salam in their greetings? Is it still obligatory to return their, you know, greetings or respond in any way possible?
Well, obviously it's not. It's not, for example, it's not necessary or obligatory to return the greeting which comes in other words. Like, for example, if someone says hi, or for example says peace be on you, okay? So it's not necessary to give back the greeting or to return the greeting using the same words, or, you know, because only the special formula which comes from someone, like for example, someone says salamun alaik, then you have to respond with the same words, okay? In that case, it is obligatory. Otherwise, if someone uses other words, it's not obligatory.
And in other languages?
In other languages, yes.
Yes. It should be in Arabic and it should be salam itself.
Yeah, it's salamun alaik.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. There is another question I would like to ask you regarding the same or the previous question that I asked you. What if, you know, a boy or a girl, I mean, children, in fact, greet you with salam. Is it still obligatory to respond?
Of course, if it comes with the same formula, salam alaik, then it is obligatory to return the salam. And it will not affect the prayer. It is.
Mm-hmm. How about, you know, not responding to the salam? Will it, in fact, invalidate the prayers?
Well, of course, it will not invalidate the prayer because you're performing your prayer as usual, but
yes,
you have done a sin. You have committed a sin by not returning the salam. So, obviously, the salam, the prayer itself is not affected. You have just committed a sin by not returning the salam.
Mm-hmm, I see. Another question quite related to this that I would like to ask you, Sheikh Javid, is that if a person has greeted with salam, but the person who's offering the prayer does not respond well due to lack of attention or any other reason, so that the short span of time passes by, is it still obligatory for the person to return to the salam or to respond to it?
Well, you know that it is obligatory to return the salam immediately, and if the time passes, then it's no longer obligatory because the time has passed, and then maybe the person is no longer waiting for the answer. So even if he's waiting to get the answer for the salam, it's not necessary to return the salam when the time has passed.
Mm-hmm, I see. Let me take a short break, and we'll be back and continue our program Islam Gloss on IRIB English Radio, and we continue our program regarding the prayer related jurisprudential laws. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host in this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about the prayer based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, Sheikh Javid, it often happens that, when you enter a house, there's a group of people there, right?
Yes.
And sometimes the person who's arriving, it is recommended for that person to salute, right?
Yeah.
So he or she offers the salutation with the exact formula, the Arabic formula, Assalamu alaikum jamian, peace be upon all of you. Well, if one of the people in the group is praying, for example, in the house,
yeah,
is it obligatory for that individual to answer the salutation, even though someone else in the group has already replied to the greeting?
Well, we know that if someone comes in and says salam or gives a salam, then if there are many people who hear the salam, it is a collective duty, It's kind of wajibun kifai, okay, a collective duty upon all the people present to return the salam. And in the event that one of the people returns the salam by saying alayka salam or alaykum salam, then others are relieved of the very duty.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what a collective duty is about. And so, obviously, the person who is praying is not supposed to return the salam. He can carry on the salam. Even though that person, we know that the person who came in, he used the plural form. He even said that, salamun alaykum to all of you. To all of you means, yes, everyone is included.
Yes.
So the person praying is not supposed to return the salam. If one of the person returns the salam, all other people are relieved. It's not necessary for all the people to give back or to return the salam.
I see. Well, is it obligatory to answer the prayer the person who greets another with the word salam instead of salamu alaikum?
Well, you know, if someone comes in and says salam, salam is not a perfect. It's not, you know, it's not a complete salam.
Mm-hmm.
So salam means peace. It right. doesn't give anything more than that, any meaning more than that. But if someone says salamun alaik, okay, so this is a complete salam. Okay, this is a perfect salam, and this will require the other person to answer to return the salam.
So salam alone does not require
an answer uh-huh. because it's not. It's who knows what salam means. It's salam. Is he speaking about peace or about something? Okay, is he greeting you or just he is just using the word salam? Because salam is not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is not necessary. But if he says salam alaik, then that is necessary to respond and to return.
I see. What about the Friday prayers? Is it obligatory to offer the Friday prayers?
Well, this is another issue, of course, when we are talking about Friday prayer. There are different things to discuss, and there are different issues, especially in this time around, which is the time of occultation,
mm-hmm.
because the religious authorities have said that in the time of the greater or major occultation, the Friday prayer or Salat al-Jumu'ah is not obligatory on everyone. It's not wajib ta'ini, okay? It is wajib takhiri. Oh, takhiri means that the duty-bound person is free to choose between offering the Dhuhr prayer and the Friday prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what takhiri means. Takhiri means it is kind of optional in the sense that you are, if you offer the Dhuhr prayer, it's no longer necessary to offer the Friday prayer. And also the vice versa. If you perform the Friday prayer and all the conditions of the Friday prayer are fulfilled, then it's not necessary to perform Dhuhr prayer.
Mm-hmm, I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Unfortunately, the time of the program has come to an end, and I wanted to ask you more questions somehow related, but due to the lack of time, we can't do that, and we postpone it to the next episode. Thank you very much, my dear listeners, for joining us on the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Rahman Rahim Mannan Kareem Salam Alim Maja Ilaha Illa Hum Ghaffar Jameel Wahhab Latif Tawwab Sami لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's attacks on Palestinian homes and infrastructure continue across the besieged Gaza Strip, killing more people, including women and children. The Israeli regime also cracks down on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, killing at least 13 in the city of Tulkarm. And fresh pro-Palestine protests take place worldwide as anti-Israel sentiments are growing over the regime's war